Welcome to the FASD Success Show, the only podcast where you can get real-world information about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. This show will help you create calm in the chaos, have hope for the future, and more importantly, save your sanity so you don't lose your flipping mind. Now, here's your host, caregiver turned world FASD educator, Jeff Noble.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 144 of the FASD Success Show. Whether you're navigating the morning chaos of missed alarms and breakfast battles or finding a moment of peace after a day filled with advocating, educating, and maybe even mediating a meltdown or two, I'm deeply honored you're here with us, right? You could be doing anything else, and I know how precious your time off is. And so the fact that you're here listening to me, I love it. I appreciate it. And it speaks volumes about your commitment as a parent. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you for being with us here today. You know, this podcast is all about creating FASD success for everyone in the community, from dedicated caregivers, frontline heroes, to the incredible individuals on the spectrum themselves. And how do we do that? By bringing you conversations with extraordinary people who are making a real impact, sharing their resilience and their success strategies. So before we jump into today's topic, which is a banger, by the way, it's really awesome. You're going to feel hopeful and you're going to learn a ton. But before we get into that, I've got something really important to share with you. There is something close to my heart because it addresses actually one of the biggest challenges we face as caregivers, and that is dealing with aggression at home. So if your ears just perked up, all good. So part of what we do is we have an online coaching program once a year. You've heard me talk about it, called the Caregiver Kickstart. And in that, we include a special segment. And I do what's called the Aggression Masterclass with a fellow coach and colleague, Barb Clark. And we knew that aggression was a major source of pain for so many families who are raising individuals on the spectrum, and not maybe even yours. Like, so seeing those faces clouded with worry during our free sessions last year, it hit us hard every time. So we did this aggression masterclass as part of the CKS as bonus material. And guess what? It wasn't just well received. It was freaking awesome for so many people who participated. The feedback actually blew us away. Stories of calmer homes, like hopeful hearts, real change happening right before their eyes. That's when Barb and I had this, you know, light bulb moment. Like, why would we keep this valuable info locked away? So that's why today I'm excited, and honestly, I'm honestly feeling pretty proud to announce that we're making the Aggression Masterclass available outside of our program. So it's going to be for everyone who needs it. This isn't just about managing aggression. It's about understanding its roots in children who are on the spectrum and transforming how you respond in those heated moments, bringing peace back into your life, yo. So I mean, could you imagine having tools at your fingertips, tools tested by families like yours who've walked this path ahead of you? So that's exactly what Barb and I are offering, and it's a chance for change rooted in compassion and practical strategies. I see I'm already getting revved up here. But seriously, folks, this is a big news, and for anyone grappling with these issues day in, day out, stay tuned, because next week, I believe, we will be announcing a date, and it's not that far off, okay? So get ready, and you'll be able to purchase some tickets and join us live for the Aggression Masterclass. And I know already, don't worry, it will be recorded, because your life is hectic. We know that. I know that. Barb knows that. But we also know that you're dealing with this every single day. And frankly, walking on eggshells sucks. So we want to take you from walking on eggshells to walking on sunshine. Anywho, okay, let's get to today's topic, all right? And who are we dealing with? Who are we talking to? And if this is your first time listening to her, or I think she's been on the show, this will be her third time on the show, Dr. Catherine LaBelle. Like, imagine if Sherlock Holmes decided to swap his magnifying glass for an MRI machine, right? That's what you got. You got Dr. Catherine LaBelle here. Like, straight up, she's a modern-day brain detective. She dives deep into the mysteries of the developing mind from her high-tech lab at the University of Calgary. With her trusty MRI scanner as her sidekick, Dr. LaBelle explores the ever-changing landscapes of children's and adolescents' brains. She's seeking clues on how these changes impact cognition and behavior. Basically, her mission is to outsmart developmental disorders by uncovering their secrets early on, ensuring every kid gets a shot at their best story. Joining her at the Developmental Neuroimaging Lab, where science meets adventure, and come on, and you're going to discover how Dr. LaBelle is changing this narrative for kids all across the globe. So we're going to get into the interview, and on the other side, I'm going to do a recap and wrap up. So if you're ready, I'm ready. Let's go. Hey, everybody, here I am. Yes. Back with Dr. Catherine LaBelle. Doctor, thank you so much for joining me. We appreciate you every time you're here.
Of course, it's great to be here.
Well, you're great to be here. Okay, so you know why we love having you is because when science answers questions, it's awesome. It's awesome because there are answers, and it's also awesome because we can plainly and blatantly say there's lots of we're not sures, right? So what I wanted to do today is just ask you some typical questions that I get from parents, and we're going to wrap it in a little bit of hope. How can science help us with hope? Because since you are an MRI specialist, FASD in the brain, you know, moms and dads all over the place want to know, can the FASD brain grow? Are they plateaued, capped? Is this it? Is all this work that I'm doing, is any of it going to pay off? You know, let's start there. Not a big deal. Let's just start off with the heavy stuff.
Sure. So in sort of typical brain growth, the brain grows in size until you're, well, okay, overall brain size only grows until about 6 or 7 years old. But within the brain, there's so many changes happening, and the proportional size of different parts of the brain keeps changing even into your 30s. So brain growth is a really long process for typical kids. And it's potentially even longer for kids who are not neurotypical. So kids like kids with FASD. But the brain, even after you get into the 30s, the brain is still plastic. It can still change. You can still learn new things, form new habits, and your brain is still adapting to that. So that we call that plasticity, brain plasticity.
Okay. Okay. So if we're going there, awesome. That's a great segue. Neuroplasticity, because you hear it. I'm going to tell you what I hear, and then you're going to tell me if all of that is wrong. Okay, so here's how I think. You know, neuroplasticity, like you said, the brain grows, can make new connections, all that good stuff. Yeah. But then I'm under the understanding that prenatal alcohol exposure, prenatal trauma, you know, all affects the development of the brain. Mm-hmm. If the injury occurs during development, and say there's a part of the brain that is impaired or, you know, not there or severely, can they still be neuroplasticity involved in that? Does that make sense? Like, yeah. When you have a stroke victim or someone who incurs a brain injury,
yes,
and is able to do that, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So the brain is always plastic. It's more plastic when you're young. So in some ways, that's a really positive thing. If you have an injury when you're young, the brain can potentially adapt to it more easily than if you or I had an injury when we're
I'm a lost cause now. That's true. That's true.
So, but in other ways, it's concerning because there's an injury that happens during development, which has then a long time to influence. But really, I think what we're learning about now with FASD and brain development is that it's sometimes a little bit slower, sometimes a little bit faster than typical development, but development is still proceeding in the way that it should.
Okay, let's unpack this because parents really want to know. Now, you're not just coming out here claiming this stuff. You've actually did a study, right?
Right.
You did a study. Can you tell us about the study, a little bit about what you found so that you're saying, yes, it does grow differently. Look, go ahead. Awesome.
So we've been looking a lot recently at younger kids with prenatal alcohol exposure. Many of them haven't been diagnosed with FASD yet, but I'm talking about kids between about 3 and 8 years old. And what we see in those little kids in terms of a variety of different brain measures is that the brain is going in the direction it should. Okay, just same as the unexposed kids. But the kids with alcohol exposure, their brains are changing a bit slower. So they're still going up when they should be going up. It's just happening a bit more slowly. Which, if we
Which
link this back to brain plasticity, probably means that there's less brain plasticity in those kids with alcohol exposure. Not zero. It's absolutely not zero.
Right. Just
There's
not happening at the
the same
speed
rate.
of
Exactly.
neurotypical because of the cascading effect, right? Of the prenatal alcohol exposure and other things. Okay. So the variability of this, then, you found that the FASD brain grows differently than a neurotypical individual.
That's right. And then interestingly, when you look at older kids with FASD, so now I'm talking like 8 to 20 kind of age range, there's some evidence, there's not a lot of research yet, but there's some evidence that it might be faster, like perhaps in a little bit of a sort of catch-up phase
And when is that?
through the teen years.
Okay, so then anecdotally, we find or found around 30 or so, and maybe it's not a catch up, or it kind of is, because if the developmental timeline is like this, could we say a 30-year-old is now functioning younger, but it's still older? Like, does that make sense? Because we hear that from parents when they get older, things calm down and they're like, boom, here we go. Is that because the executive functioning, is developed? Like, this is what's going on.
Yeah, so in terms of brain development, I think we can characterize it as a little bit slower overall and a little bit behind. So it's happening more gradually. It's going to take longer to get to the same place. And the end point might be slightly different. So the mature FASD brain might still not look exactly like a mature neurotypical brain in terms of very subtle measurements that we can get and very subtle ways that it works. On a gross level, they look almost identical.
Okay.
You wouldn't be able to tell, Jeff, if I gave you a whole bunch of pictures of FASD
Right.
brains and
Okay. Because
not.
you do MRI, right? That's how
That's right.
you get your information, your data, right?
Right.
You're straight up at a hospital, aren't you?
Yep, the Alberta Children's Hospital.
Yeah. And you're doing a study and MRI. And that's where we would hear from families who, either were denied MRI to look at the brain, or they found nothing, and it leaves a parent frustrated. And you have said in the past, and for our newer listeners, we could reiterate, that's because a singular MRI, for the most part, can't diagnose or won't show any of those brain variations.
Yeah, there are some extreme cases, of course, where
Yes.
MRI
Oh, yes.
shows.
Where the corpus callosum,
Yes,
like you could,
exactly. Yeah. But in the vast majority of cases of FASD, particularly where there's no other concern of epilepsy or, some other disorder, we don't see any differences that you can pick up with the eye. Like you're not going to look at the MRI scan and say, oh, that part's missing or that part's different, or like they look the same on a gross level. And so MRI is not generally useful for diagnosis for a condition like FASD. It's really great for research because we do very subtle measurements and then we look at a group scale. A group of kids with FASD have a smaller part here or a less connected part here than a group of kids without FASD. But on an individual level, you can't make those same statements.
How do you measure that? Okay, so you have multiple MRIs. What number are you checking for numbers, or are you looking at the for color, like different shit? Like, what do you look at?
So MRI uses a magnetic field and radio waves to pick up signal from tissues in the brain. And it's a really powerful technique because there's a lot of different ways we can manipulate that signal. And by doing that, it's sensitive to different things. So ultimately, we're looking at numbers. We're looking at the signal that we get from the brain, but that signal can reflect different things. Sometimes that signal tells us how water is moving in the brain, how fast and how restricted it is. And that tells us about how the brain is structured and connected. Sometimes we can look at blood flow, and then we can learn something about brain function via how the blood is flowing in
Is
the
that a
brain.
functional MRI or is that a diff?
So functional MRI is sensitive to changes in blood oxygen. So when your brain is working in a particular location, your body sends a lot more oxygen to that place because
Cool.
it's working.
Cool.
And that's what functional MRI is sensitive to, is that change in oxygen.
And would that be beneficial for an individual on the spectrum?
Again, not as a routine sort of, not as a diagnostic
Got it.
tool.
Understood.
Yeah,
Understood.
it's super useful for research, and we can
Cool.
learn a lot about different ways that the FASD brain might process
Got
things
it.
or,
So you're measuring things from the brain. You're manipulating the machine, right? For and doing cool things. And then there's data that is extracted from that.
That's right, numbers. And so each person is going to have a number or a series of numbers that represents something, whether it's related
Sure.
to blood oxygenation or water flow or
Right. You're like,
volume.
trust me, dude, there's things, okay?
Yep,
You know, don't
numbers.
let me go in there. Okay.
Just, I mean, these
I
are numbers.
believe you. I believe you. No, that's a good way to say it because
Yeah.
you don't want to say a term and then everyone's like, ah, because then we're trying to follow, right? Yeah, it's true.
Think about you go and get a bunch of blood tests and they're going to come back with numbers, right?
Yeah,
It's the
okay.
same idea.
Yeah.
And so on a big scale, those numbers are similar between typical and FASD. But when we look at really specific numbers and we look at a group level, we can often see differences that tell us something about potentially how alcohol is affecting the
Give
brain.
me one example.
Of a measure.
Yeah, and a number that told you something.
Yeah, so volume is probably an easy one to understand. So generally, kids with FASD have smaller brains at the whole brain level and when you look at specific regions. So we hippocampus, for example, is a region of the brain that's involved in memory, and that tends to be smaller in kids with FASD compared to neurotypical kids. It's not smaller in every kid with
Yeah,
FASD. At a
understood.
group level, we see smaller hippocampus overall, and that tells us something about how alcohol is probably affecting the hippocampus and then how that might be related to memory.
Okay, and when you're doing this research, that's like implicit bias, or you're not trying to prove something that you think. You're
No,
just
confirmation bias.
letting
No.
the numbers and then trying to figure out what that means.
Absolutely. And sometimes we find things that totally surprise us.
I know. Tell me again. Because you did, right?
We did. Yeah. So we, let's say 10 years ago and before that, pretty much all of the brain imaging research in kids with FASD was older kids and adolescents. Okay. And I think we're missing a really critical age range in these younger kids, which is when a lot of the behavior problems start to come out, right? They're like, you start to
Yes, when
see the
expectations
symptoms.
start to increase, honest, and then obviously capacity is not catching up, and therefore, the gap, right? And as they get older, the gap could grow because the expectations do.
So
Sorry.
we wanted to know like what's going on in the brain of these younger kids, like 3 to 7 years old. What's happening in those brains? And does it look just like the older kids? And that's what we expected. We expected to find the same thing in these little kids that we see in older kids. And we actually found completely the opposite thing. So the younger kids had more connected brains. The alcohol exposed kids had more connected brains than the not exposed kids. Whereas all of the studies that have been done before that in older kids found less connected brains in FASD.
Okay. Well, so individuals on the spectrum at younger had more co brain connections
That's right.
than those of neurotypical kids. And that is because, is that where the thinking theory, tell me how then we get to it micro faster in some places? Is this where you,
Yes.
and that was what
So
you learned, right?
exactly. And then so
Fucking
what we
cool, man. How is that not the coolest shit?
right?
Yeah, like nerd out on. I loved it. I know we're, but I know moms, dads are listening going, yeah, tell us more, because this informs their advocacy. This informs their own personal understanding, empathy, and interventions. That's how important your work is, man. Not only just numbers. And we need scientists and nerds and data geeks to do that, because that's, it's in the numbers. Awesome. Keep going. Sorry.
No, so I wanted to know, like, is what we found, like, I wanted to connect what we found with what everybody else had found in older kids. So I wanted to know, like, how these link together and how to make sense of it all. So what we did is we brought those kids back. We looked at their brains again a year later,
Oh,
a
see, did
couple
we
years
miss
later.
something? Okay, geez,
So
keep.
we're not just looking now at what does your brain look like at one point in time, but we're actually able to look at how that brain grows,
Okay, yeah. Like,
which is
that's
really cool.
incredible.
And it's really important. It's super important to understand how these brains grow because it tells you something very new that you don't have when you just look at it at one time point, right?
Yeah.
Very important. So this was the interesting part because what we saw is that the kids with FASD, their brains were growing slower. So they started, essentially, they started higher with more connectivity.
Right.
Then the brains were growing, they were growing, but they were growing more slowly than the kids without exposure. And so those kids, the kids without exposure, started lower. But by the end, like by the time they were 8, their brains were more connected
Got
than the
it. Got
kids.
it. So they came out like a sprinter, shot out
Yeah.
of the gate. This could then maybe explain some of the things we hear, like early on, hit all the milestones, sweet little kid, and then as they got older, expectations too. But people don't even know this. And you guys are just learning this, right? So let's get back to that hope message. What does this tell us? This tells us that, in fact, there is a period of growth and development. I am careful with the term catch up, but for a lack of a better term, catch up doesn't necessarily mean catch up to neurotypical peers, right?
So I think there's a lot wrapped up in this, and there's a lot we still don't know,
Agreed.
of course.
Yeah.
But I one thing it suggests to me is that earlier interventions are going to be more effective because the brain is a bit more susceptible to that.
Okay.
And also that interventions probably take a little bit longer in kids with alcohol exposure
Yeah,
than
like
kids
6 months
without.
before you change something. Yeah.
Yes. The brain is just, it needs more time
It
to
does.
change.
It needs more exposure and experience to the repetition.
Yeah. And then there is, like I said, there is some evidence that development catches up to some extent later in later childhood and during the teen years. But I think we still need to learn a lot about that. You had asked me before about windows of opportunity, and this is a really nice idea. Like if we can pick the right time to provide support, is it going to be more effective, essentially? And this
Yeah.
is something we're still learning about.
Because if we go back a little bit, this you originally, the study was mental health, right?
So we've got a few different lines of research on
Yeah, that's
FASD
good.
in the
You were
lab.
looking and then you found and you're like, whoa, day. Okay, keep going. Yeah.
So we've got one bit where we were looking at younger kids, and data collection is complete for that part. So now we're really in the data analysis phase where we're trying to really understand what that data shows us. And then we've got another line of research in slightly older kids, really looking at brain and mental health in FASD. And so that's longitudinal as well. We want to know how the brain is growing, and we want to know how mental health is changing over time in kids. And we really want to understand why the rates of mental health challenges are so high in kids with FASD. And if we can understand at a brain level why that is, and if we can understand at a brain level why some of the more standard mental health treatments are less effective in kids with FASD.
This blows the lid off things in terms of where we go and just trying to wrap your head around how awesome that is. And so what do you need to find that out? Like, what's next, like in your, what to that next level, right? Or because you're still going through the initial data, so you wouldn't know your next steps until that step is complete.
So Data collection takes a long time. We need a big group of participants to be able to detect the subtle changes that we're looking at. And this type of data collection takes a long time just to do, right? Families are coming in, they're giving us several hours of their time.
And you are still recruiting currently for
That's
the
right.
mental health MRRA1 if you are in Calgary and or Edmonton.
That's right. Yep. We're still recruiting kids with alcohol exposure.
Cool. We'll have that stuff on our website too, and you
Awesome.
shout it out before we go.
So we're still recruiting, but we also like to look at data as we can so that we don't have to wait till the end of a study to learn anything useful, right? So we are looking at the data that we have already, and there's some interesting bits emerging. So for example, we see depression problems more commonly in the kids that we're studying with alcohol exposure, whereas the levels of anxiety are pretty similar between the kids with alcohol exposure and the kids without.
Okay.
And then
It's just
really,
then the capacity to manage that could be compromised for individuals on the
yes,
spectrum because of the regulation and
totally,
executive
yep.
function. Okay.
And what's really interesting is we see different relationships between those depression symptoms and brain measures in the kids with FASD. So
Okay, like I just went like this. What's that mean?
all of these things are rooted in the brain, right?
Right? Yeah. Okay.
And if you have a problem in your brain, it will manifest as a problem in behavior,
And a
right?
symptom. Yeah. It's a symptom of a neurological difference.
Exactly. So what's interesting is that with anxiety, okay, the people who have more anxiety, their brains are different than the people who have less anxiety. But that sort of framework is the same in our study in the kids with and without FASD.
Got that.
So the
So
ones who
totally
have
get
the
it.
head,
So the basic overall arc of anxiety is the same in the controlled. Is the controlled the kids on the spectrum? Or
the
how?
controls are kids without alcohol exposure.
Okay. So the control was the kids without. Okay.
So
Wow. Okay.
those look the same. So
Yes.
again, this is one study. You don't want to read too much into it, but what this suggests is like it's the same brain areas that are affected in the same way driving these anxiety symptoms, no matter whether you have alcohol exposure or not. We don't see that in depression. We see different relationships. The parts of the brain are differently related to depression symptoms in kids with and without alcohol exposure.
Do we know how is that showing up? Like, how are you measuring those differences?
So we've been looking at volume.
Okay.
And interestingly, in kids without alcohol exposure, we see kind of what you might expect. Smaller volumes in some really specific areas of the brain are associated with worse symptoms of depression. Okay, right? The bigger that part of your brain is, sort of the better it's working and the less depression symptoms you have. That kind of makes sense.
Yes.
We see the opposite in the kids with FASD. So actually, the bigger that part of their brain is, the worse their symptoms of depression.
So I can picture you looking up from a piece of paper going,
Yeah.
mother of God, right? Like you can't say call the authorities, it's not Godzilla, but what
Yeah.
are you spend most of your time in just perpetual like
Basically, this is my life. Yeah, it's basically
Yeah, like the
what they
data,
call.
triple checking. I mean, you brought kids back in.
Yes. And we're bringing these guys back in. So we don't have longitudinal data yet, like multiple,
Okay.
but we're getting there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is really important, right? So
Yeah.
every question we answer makes us ask 10 or 100.
Yeah. It's
Okay.
like
So
never
that's
ends. When do you get
it never
sat?
ends.
How, as a researcher, what's the satisfying part of it then?
I mean, when you can figure out some of the story is always really exciting
Like putting
and
the pieces
satisfying.
together, you know,
Exactly, like
and
the
of a
puzzle.
big, massive puzzle, right?
But it's a puzzle with no edges. Like there's just always,
Yeah, that's
right?
jeez. It's like
So,
video games as a service, right? It's always like the next quest, you know?
yes,
And
yeah.
then you think you're done, and then they're like, here's the DLC. Here you go.
Yeah,
Purchase some
totally.
more. Here's a new problem. Like when you're reading, and then you're like, well, that's a different question now I'm asking.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's talk about these questions. Parents have questions. How can you tell the difference between a development of a neurotypical and individual on the spectrum? So, how can you tell if it's FASD or if they're being asses, sort of deal?
I don't know, but if they find out, can they tell me how to understand
Yeah,
how
tell your
children do?
kids too. Oh yeah, buddy, trust me. But like,
Yeah,
how do
and
you how because you know it comes down to also interpreting being taken
yeah.
advantage of and stuff, but in terms of on the science level.
Yeah. So on the science level, like from a data perspective, we need to look at lots of individuals multiple times to really properly tease this apart and understand not just what brains look like and how they change over time, but also the multitude of factors that influence that. So alcohol exposure is one factor, and it's a super important
Yes,
factor.
ma'am.
Absolutely. And all my data points to this, and I will say that forever. But there's other things that change and modify brain development as well, right? And so we have to think about those things too. Those are things like sex and age, but there are also things like postnatal environment or whether there were other prenatal exposures and then
Yeah,
genetics,
well,
right? Like
polysubstance
all of
abuse,
this stuff.
right? Yeah, it's never enough. You know, it's got a cocktail of stuff going because the individual is looking to reduce said pain, you know? So that is interesting. So, okay, then as I say that, there are other factors, but then there is also positive factors too.
Absolutely.
And what are some of those?
So we're looking at some like physical activity, but more, I think more relevant are like positive caregiving relationships postnatally, stable home placements, you know, good school environment. We haven't measured all of these, but these are things that matter
Sure.
and we know from other research.
The community of practice did some initial work on that about stable placements. How about for older kids? Because the belief, not from everyone, you know, parents will do this till they die, but the belief that my kid's older, you know, what if they just got a diagnosis? Because people are listening to this 16, 17, 18, 20, 30. Now that it's becoming more prevalent, more adults are getting diagnosed. How can we make parents hopeful that the work they're putting in, you know, it still matters that even if they're not young?
Because the brain's always able to change. So that always matters. So we talked a little bit about windows of opportunity,
Yeah.
and I don't want people to take the converse that there's a window of opportunity and nothing else matters. That's not what we're talking about at all. What we're talking about is times where things might be easier and faster to change, but the brain is still capable of changing across the lifespan. So it's always worth learning something new, trying something new, forming new habits when those are positive. You know, it's always worth having positive experiences, and those will make a difference.
And
It's
that
just if we
gap
can
too
get
of,
those earlier, that's probably better, but that does not mean that later is not
yeah,
going to
it's like saving for retirement. You know,
Yes,
earlier is
exactly.
better, but you could still, you just got to put more juice into the old
And it's
account, right? With the,
better to start at 40 than never, right?
yeah, because change can happen quick too. Our guys are resilient, the brain adapts, it naturally wants to feel good. So when it is under less pressure, and what do I mean by that? What's one of the takeaways here is about your expectations of a developmental trajectory for your kids. I've always stated that it looks different and it takes longer. You know, it's like that silly putty and you stretch it out. That is development. But then it's also for parents to realize, okay, my kid hit out of the gate lots of milestones. Then, as you know, more was expected of his brain, you know, that's where we saw symptoms. But knowing even as an adult to make sure that the postnatal environment is good, we're working on strengths. And if a parent knows, okay, no way this is happening at 18, settle in, you know, we're gonna do this. So then it doesn't seem like they're doing nothing because oftentimes it seems like they're doing
I
nothing.
know it can take a long
It's hard.
time.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I know you're like, oh, this is, you're just saying what the science says. And I understand there's a very much the gray and the implementation. And for parents to know and have science behind that, that's a big deal, right?
So we know that peak sort of brain values don't happen until the late 20s and 30s. So the brain is still developing during that time. It's still super important that there are positive and good experiences. Like I said, the brain can still change after that. you and I, we don't have all hope lost stuff. We can still
I
learn
was going to say, ooh,
new
after 40, what do we do now?
things. But even when we think about the spectrum of brain development, that's still going into the 20s and 30s. So, being diagnosed at 18, you're only halfway through that development.
That's my point, dude. So you hear, how many times have you heard this where you met somebody, re-met somebody from high school, but in high school they were rebel rousers, for to use my grandma's term, right? You know what I'm saying? They were
Oh,
part
yeah.
animal. They do. You were like, how are they going to even make it to 20? But then you see them later 20s, early 30s, family, job, kids, and they say, oh, I grew up. No. Your brain developed, which allowed you the maturation to catch up and to make better decisions, right? So you're just as impulsive, but now you, since your brain has developed, it's just like, whoa, you got kids and a job. And that's it, crush it, boom, right?
Yeah, and so people need to have the tools, right, to develop safely,
So yeah, and knowing in a space that it takes longer, and then if you could really do this. So okay, so if people, how do people get a hold of you, and if they're in the area to actually do this, what's that process look like?
So if people are interested, that's phenomenal. They can contact our lab. I think you're going to share the phone number and email
Yeah,
address,
all that. You
right?
can say it out loud if you want. No problem for the people, there's going to be listening and watching.
Great. BrainMRI@ucalgary.ca is our email address. And so they can contact us there and we can tell them all about what the study entails. We can talk through whether it's a good fit for them, whether they're interested. We can answer any questions, all of that. There's no commitment by just touching base with us via email or phone. So we can walk through the whole process.
So what's next, man? What are you doing? Like, you got lots of cooking up in the lab here.
So we're gonna be chugging through the data that we have, really trying to extract as much information from it as we can. But we're also planning ahead for the next phase. And I think what I'd like to focus on is executive function and how that's rooted in the brain of kids with FASD and how that develops over adolescence.
Because that is the key to adulthood.
Yes.
And that's most impaired. I talk about it on a smaller scale in terms of the brain hierarchy. I learned that from Dr. Pai, and thus the neocortex being the furthest away. So, hardest for the cells to get to. It just makes so much sense because then, even with my own family, with my sister, who would always talk the talk, I want to do this, I want, but would never follow through. And people think that's a personal thing. But now, when you understand, she wanted to, she just didn't know how to shift the gear. She used to say, Jeff, I could see the dishes, I just couldn't do them. She was a great mom, so. When we could link the science to the symptoms and people see it in real term, and then they can make that distinction, that means their intervention is different. It's empathy, it's not anger. And then, of course, we can help with all that other stuff. That's how important it is. And anyone in your lab, Dr. LaBelle, should just listen to this because it is important. Because do you get bummed out? Are you like, what the? Sometimes, are you like,
Sometimes
what is this shit?
there's a lot of rejection in science. So we definitely have our low points, yes.
So rejection from what you expected the data to be, rejection
No.
from rejected, yeah.
No, the data is fantastic. Rejection from getting grants or publishing papers or the students getting scholarships, those kinds of rejections.
Yeah, oh, like the finding, because yeah, you have to find the.
Whenever we connect back, honestly, whenever we connect back to the kids and the families, that boosts our spirits, reminds us
Yeah.
why we do what we do and why it's
Dudes, for
important.
sure. Lots of comments because it is key. Because oftentimes you're looking at numbers,
Oh yeah.
and
And we're geeks. Like we like numbers.
oh,
This
yeah,
is
for sure. But it's hard to, but there's people
Totally.
behind it, right? So
Yeah,
it's good when
absolutely.
you
We
can
need,
see
yeah.
that it's tangible in the workforce.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we could wrap this up with our points that the brain of an individual on the spectrum differentiates from a neurotypical brain in ways that it could grow faster and then slower, right? So start fast, sprint out of the gate, and then settle in for the long marathon.
Yes.
Where kids, neurotypical kids, like a little slower out of the gun, but would catch speed in the momentum, right? Okay,
Yes,
great. So we
exactly.
could say that. There are multiple factors that are in play: prenatal exposure, prenatal trauma, mom
Absolutely.
genetics, epigenetics, all that stuff, right? The prenatal environment significantly impacts brain development.
Yes, in
And
multiple ways.
the postnatal, so post-baby environment really plays a factor because the brain is continuously growing.
Absolutely.
Symptoms, i.e., behaviors, are a reflection of the differences neurologically, because when prenatal alcohol exposure meets the bloodstream in the brain, it affects the development of brain domains. These brain domains work together in synchronicity and talk to each other. So if there's impairment or breakdown structurally or chemically, then the interpretation somebody on the spectrum has of their environment is different. And so their outcomes might be viewed as willful, purposeful, intentional. It also makes them susceptible to mental health issues and some other factors. But postnatal factor, postnatal experience, and it's never too late.
Never too late.
So it's never too late. So if grandma is listening to this, or if mom is listening to this and they have a kid in their 20s, 30s, or 40s,
Absolutely.
it's not too late, because what ends up happening is when we understand that this is brain difference and the science is telling us, right? Then we are able to interact, intervene, interject, and create better days and outcomes.
Late is better than never.
And you are going to keep drilling down, and your study is still open with
Yes.
the MRIs, and you and your team are continually asking more questions, answering more questions, and you love doing it, and you love connecting with the community.
Totally.
Did I get that?
You got it all. Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. Okay. All right. So that is the big key. That is the key. Now, are people able to read this study? Like, is it okay, if we put that on our blog, could people read it?
Yes, the scientific publications, you mean?
Yes, of what
Yes,
you're doing. Okay, so
absolutely.
we'll put
So,
those on and then we'll get a summary rocket.
that's
And
what I
then
was
you.
going to say. We have summaries of some of them. You and I have worked on some of this before.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And my
Okay,
lab has
cool.
worked on some of it. I think you and I did a podcast, didn't we? Going through one and like translating it from science.
Oh, cool. Let's keep doing that. Let's keep doing that. You'll have to
So
forgive me my
absolutely.
memory and maybe then my executive functioning. Oh, where do you sit on that topic? Is memory a part of executive functioning or no?
I would call working memory part of executive function, yes.
Okay, cool. That's just I know that is a debate in the community, so I just want to know where you stood about that.
But
This
yeah,
has
we
been awesome. Go
like
continue.
scientists in general, and I speak not just for myself, we love when people read our stuff. So a lot of it's, behind paywalls and stuff like that. But if you ever want access to a study, just email the person that did it and it will make their day. Like, seriously, it will make their day. So if parents are trying to access stuff and they're frustrated because they can't and you have to be a member of the university, just email people. They will love it. I love when people
Oh,
ask.
tip, when someone's saying, "Hey, doctor, let's do this." Man, good. I hope you're fired up because just understanding they could see the forest through the trees, and they're not just, why are they like this? Why do they do this? And then conversely, they don't feel so alone and or like they're bad parents, because that's not the case. This is
No,
hard.
that's not what it is. Yeah.
Yeah, this is hard. Okay, cool. So you gave the website and all that good stuff. So we can't wait. I can't wait. You are kicking butt, your team's kicking butt, and of course, will you come back and do it again?
Of course.
You'll get the John Goodman jacket, the SNL jacket at one point. I think it's just a
Excellent.
sticker, to be honest with you.
I'll take
But
it.
Catherine, Dr. LaBelle, you, your team are awesome. We appreciate every time you're here. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, buddy, anytime. man, that was awesome, Dr. LaBelle. You are the best. Thank you so much. See, folks, people are doing such hard work, such good, relevant brain work. And thank you again. You are the best. She humors me, I bet. She's probably like, this guy. This guy. I'll talk to him. But then she probably gets off and wonders, how does this guy even get through a day? Well, lots of help, I'll tell you that. Okay, let's do a quick recap because this is fantastic. First of all, brain growth in FASD. My dudes, the brain continues to grow and change well into one's 30s, with different parts developing at varying rates. For individuals with FASD, the process could be slower, suggesting a delayed but ongoing development compared to neurotypical individuals. And that was amazing to see. And then, of course, she talked about a neuroplasticity. So for neuroplasticity, think of the brain's superpower to adapt and reshape itself. It's like how clay could be molded into different shapes. Your brain could recognize itself by forming new connections or strengthening existing ones. This happens throughout life, especially when we learn new things or recover from injuries. So even with challenges that come with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, the brain's ability to change should offer hope for developing new skills and coping strategies over time. Over time. You see what I'm trying to say here? What was also cool was Dr. LaBelle's research that focused on children aged 3 to 8 with prenatal alcohol exposure. And the primary findings indicate that while brain development in these children may lag, it still progresses in the expected direction, albeit at a slower pace. Slow. Older children and adolescents. The evidence suggests that the brain's development in older children with FASD may accelerate, entering, you know, the catch-up phase during the teen years. And we talked about long-term development, and the developmental trajectory of individuals with FASD might extend longer, with the possibility of a more gradual catch-up in certain cognitive functions, which is kind of aligning with the anecdotal reports we're hearing from parents who notice significant improvements as their child's reach their 30s, right? Late 20s, early 30s. And then we talked about the MRI and diagnosis, and of course, Dr. LaBelle emphasized that while MRI is invaluable for research, it rarely reveals definitive differences on an individual level that would aid in diagnosing someone. This actual tool's strength lies in group comparison, and that highlights subtle variances in brain structure and connectivity. But then we talked about the technology and imaging, and she explained that the technicalities of MRI scans. She talked about the ability to capture detailed signals from the brain. And then she said these signals represent various physical properties. They're analyzed numerically to infer brain structure and function. That's when I was like, well, how do you do that? But then I said, we also talked about functional MRIs. And that touched about functional MRI, which measures brain activity by detecting changes in blood oxygen levels. Well, not used diagnostically for individuals on the spectrum, functional MRI proves invaluable in research, and it offers insight into the FASD brain processes information differently. Talked about brain volume and connectivity and how the findings indicate that individuals with FASD might have smaller brain volumes, including specific regions of the hippocampus. And the hippocampus is crucial for memory. Imagine, like, the hippocampus is the control room where your brain stores all sorts of memories. From what you had for breakfast to your first bike ride. It's not just about storing these memories. The hippocampus also helps you navigate through them, figuring out which ones are important for the situation at hand. So when we talked about FASD affecting the hippocampus, it's like saying the brain's ability to manage and access memories is impacted, which can influence learning and behavior. And it could also seem like lying and confessing. confabulation, but we'll get into that next time. So back to the findings with the specific regions like the hippocampus for memory. So these insights from the research come from comparing numerical data across groups, revealing subtle differences that suggest alcohol's impact on brain development. Then we talked about surprise findings in younger children. Dr. LaBelle, she talked about intriguing insights from her research on younger children with prenatal alcohol exposure. So contrary to expectations, these children exhibited more brain connectivity than their neurotypical counterparts, a finding that diverges from previous studies on older children and adolescents with FASD. Whoa, science! And the implications for interventions and obviously development. We talked about the importance of early interventions and given the brain's heightened susceptibility to change in younger years. However, interventions will require more time and effort to change in children with FASD due to the brain's slower growth and developmental state. That doesn't mean they're stupid, and it does not mean they will not be able to get there. It just means it's going to take longer and it's going to look different. So speaking about longitudinal research, Dr. LaBelle discussed ongoing research efforts that they're still recruiting for, including those long-term studies that track brain growth and its correlation with mental health outcomes with our kiddos. So preliminary findings suggest distinctions in how depression and anxiety manifest in the brain depending on prenatal alcohol exposure. Then we talked about multiple factors beyond prenatal alcohol exposure. We talked about polysubstance use and including postnatal environment and other prenatal exposures, right? It shapes the brain. Positive factors such as stable home, supportive educational environments are crucial, man. We know that. Just with an emphasis, okay, of the brain's capacity to change, man. She reassured you, this is the doctor, that the brain's ability to adapt and grow continues throughout life. And just like saving retirement, it's better earlier, but it is still good to do it at any time. Just start, saving for retirement at any time, because it's not just a window of opportunity. It's continuous learning and positive experiences. That's what I want you to have, more positive experiences. And how do we have these experiences? You have these experiences by listening and learning and growing. And one of the struggles you're facing is while you learn this new information, it is followed by you probably feeling like a bag of shit because you're like going through all of the previous situations that you have dealt with that weren't conducive to somebody's growth, right? It didn't work. And it was lots of yelling and screaming. And knowing about the brain also helps with aggression. And that's one of the things we're going to talk about with the aggression masterclass, okay? Like when we put this out, buy a freaking ticket, jump in, and we're gonna do it. We're gonna teach you. I have been learning and I have been going, obviously going through it myself in the trenches, not only as a foster parent, but as a sibling. But we have been able to help people, man. We have been able to help people have less aggression in their homes. You should not have to get your ass kicked. That is just not what should be happening, okay? So how do we not do that? How do we not have everybody walk on eggshells? We have to know where it comes from, the pathology of aggression, because the answers are out there. And we have taken the time to learn, to curate, and to mold in a way that's gonna help you be more of a badass. Because make no mistake, man, even though you don't feel like it sometimes, you are an amazing person. You are a good parent. You're looking for answers. You're maybe in our groups. Maybe you've taken one of our online coaching programs. Whatever the case may be, you're here. And if you're here at this time, at this spot in the Mother Effin' podcast, you want it. You want it, and you're not going to stop searching. You're not going to quit, and you're not going to give up. So to that, I say, well, let me fucking help you. Let me help you. Let my team help you. Let my community help you, because you don't have to do this alone. You know more. Even if you're an introvert, you don't have to do this alone, okay? So freaking come do it with us. Go to our blog, fasdsuccess.com/podcast. If you go there, it's going to have blog posts from every one of our episodes. And it'll have the show notes, and you can check out the research, and you could join our caregiver group on Facebook, facebook.com/group/FASD forever. There's over 7,000 people in there, man. Get in there. Do not do this alone. We're not going to judge you. I know this is tough. Raising an individual on the spectrum has been one of the hard, not one, it's been the fucking hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life. And I'm sitting here screaming into a microphone because I know what can happen and what's on the other side. And you say, Jeff, but I'm so exhausted. Well, I can't do anything about that except for say, I see you. I feel you. And we've been there. And I want to help you get off the mat. And if you're off the mat, I want to help you go from crawling to running to sprinting to kicking ass, man, because you're the shit. I love you. I will be back with you. Can follow us on our socials, all that good stuff. We are going to just let everybody know about the Aggression Masterclass. We're going to have a good time. So follow us there, here, there, everywhere. Don't forget to subscribe to this show, too. I got to say that more. I got to say shit more. I love you. Until then, keep up the good work. You're doing awesome. I love you. All right. Bye.